Okay, this is board time, March 18th at 2:35.
Okay, so we got to jump in and do we have, my agenda disappeared.
Another we have agenda? The minutes from before.
Okay, thank you, sir. Okay, approval of the minutes. Okay, right here. Have you been able to actually read the minutes and make sure they're all ready to approve?
Word for word?
Yes.
Are you getting technical on me?
Just make sure we do it. We're diligent. If not, let's hold it off.
I must confess,
I've been working on alternative four in every breath, and so I haven't read them.
I'm ready.
I believe the meetings are accurate and complete, but do you want to hold them until next week?
He does.
Okay, that's fine.
We got outvoted. We got outvoted when he catch up.
Well, you were here, so I assume that you vote to
say
that reflects what happened.
The way you protect your stuff, you vote for it. And come back to having voted on
the
prevailing side.
So read and bring back. Thank you.
I like to see the minutes because there was something in there we talked about, and I'm going, I don't know about that.
That's what I.
We
said.
Didn't
that's
take
what
yeah,
counts.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're bringing those back next week.
Yep. Okay, legislative call for Mike Burgess. Go ahead there, Axel.
All right. Hey, Mike, we're here. I'm going to put you on speaker. Just a second. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, we're here at board time. The chair just opened the meeting, and just so you know, they have your agenda in front of them, starting with the operative and budget and going on down. I also put them for each of the bills that you listed. They have the Senator House Bill report, the latest one I could find. So as we go through those, as there's questions, we'll try to look to the report for some details. In the room, you've got the county manager and various staff, as well as the paper and some citizens. So with that, I'll throw it back to the chair or back to you.
Okay,
Mike, you can lead.
Hi, counselors. It's been a while since we've talked, I think, all as the board of you together, and I thought it was a good idea to give you guys a pretty quick update today on where things stand in session and answer any questions that you have and go over some topics that are, all of these topics should be familiar to you or will be familiar to you once we start talking about them. We are at the virtual halfway point of session. As you know, the session is 105 days long. This is actually day number 66 of 105. But last Wednesday was that virtual halfway point, and that was the House of Origin policy committee or policy bill cutoff. That means House bills out of the House, Senate bills out of the Senate that do not have a fiscal impact. So you will remember that we spent a considerable amount of time at the beginning of session in the committee hearing rooms. The policy committee passed the policy committee cutoff, and then we're ultimately at the floor cutoff, which again was that last Wednesday. And it's a big milestone because it's really a big weed out period where the bills that just the policy bills that aren't going to make it don't get passed off their respective floors, and they're virtually dead for the rest of the session. So from a lobbying perspective, it really clears the deck as to what's left that's in play. What coincides with that, transitioning into the operating budget, is almost always within about 10 days to 2 weeks after that halfway point, we will see a budget proposal. And I would anticipate that to happen next week at some point. It's the House's turn to go first. Councilor Mielke, you will remember from your days here that the House goes first 1 year, the Senate goes first the next year, and I guess when I say the next year, that means the beginning of the biennium. It's the House's turn to go first, so we will see a House operating budget proposal, like I said, most likely next week, and that will be a big milestone. As you know, the budget is the biggest document that the legislature produces each year, and even though it's a spending document, it's also a big policy statement as well. So looking forward to that. Underneath it, I have a line on the 502 revenue. That's, of course, the marijuana initiative and the desire of local governments to have a portion of the revenues being generated by 502 impacts be diverted back to the cities and counties for the cost of your implementation of it, whether through law enforcement, land use, permitting, compliance, whatever the case may be. I put that in under the operating budget because the 502 split that would go to local government will have to be assumed in the budget as it comes out. And so I wanted to kind of highlight that the piece I will be looking for, along with the other shared revenues that you are familiar with, such as the criminal justice account, fair funding is another source of shared revenue, potential sales tax streamlining, there's any number of them. And we'll see what those assumptions are when the House pops that budget out in terms of what the revenue splits will be. I do want to make you aware, though, in my conversations with folks about the marijuana revenue, that there is a strong desire for revenue, but there is a strong position of support for what we've referred to kind of oversimplified as a pay-for-play provision. There's a significant amount of the legislature and other advocacy groups that want to make it a stipulation that you do allow some sort of 502 activity to receive funds. And whether that be with recreational stores, the distribution, or the growing part. Or I guess I'd call them the growers, or the more for the point, I guess producers is probably the right way to say it. But any one of those three tiers, absent of having one of those three tiers, there's significant opposition to having local governments get a piece of the revenue. I've used the arguments that look, even if the county does not allow the activity, if the city does, these felonies and other associated problems, anything to do with kids, and juveniles ends up in your court system, but I want to be honest with you, it is a tough hill to climb to make the case, because unfortunately, in Clark County's case, it's a position that is pretty well widely accepted that you do have to allow some, you have to give the debt, is some of the words I've heard as well. So I don't know if you want to make a comment on that. I'll continue to try to chip away at it, but quite frankly, right now, I don't feel so good about it.
So Mike, Tom here. How much money are we talking about?
I'm sorry?
How much money are we talking about?
Well, Counselor, that's still up in the air. The last proposal that was debated was a week or so ago, and it was in the House Finance Committee. There was a consolidated bill that was heard that has a number of aspects to it, where it does harmonization of the medical into being regulated. There's actually a tax consolidation theory going on here, too, where you'll remember that the initiative called for, I believe it's a 25% tax per activity or per transaction. The bill that finance heard would do away with those three tiers of tax and come up with one rate at the point of sale. There were other components in the bill, but also in that bill was the local government distribution. And in a convoluted way, they get to the local government distribution being about 6% of the state revenue, or of the total revenue that comes in. So you're asking how much? In that proposal, it was 6%. Having said that, that is not going to be the be-all, end-all. I think there's a recognition by a lot of legislators that was a starting point, and it's a discussion that is still underway. The problem with it is, though, that it is hard to project because the sales have really only been going on for, I think, I want to say 6 months. Actually, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's only about a six-month history of sales and revenue being generated. And that's a pretty brief snapshot in time. And so the legislature is troubled with, what's the amount we give local government? Should we give them a percentage or an aggregate number every year? If we do that, they don't know how much of the piece of the pie they would be giving up to local government. So, Counselor, that was a very long-winded lobbyist way of answering. I don't know what the actual projection would be off of that 6% right now. But again, quoting you a number off of that 6% number would be inaccurate, given that it's going to be very fluid between now and the end of session.
Has there been any conversation as to, with all the new taxes being added to it, becoming more expensive than what they could buy it on the street for?
Absolutely, Counselor, and that's the response to what I probably not very artfully said, the elimination of the different tiered taxes, the 25% that's levied three different times, the removal of that and going to what I call it a compounded, that's my word, a compounded tax that's just at the point of sale. And I want to say that was in the, well, I don't want to say the number or speculate on what the number was, but that, Counselor, is in response to, yes, that you're not, because part of the promise of the initiative was to do away with some of the black market. Well, because of the pricing within it and the tax levels that were contemplated within the initiative, the pricing is too high, and it's forcing people to stay in the black market. So that is a significant part of the discussion. That's why that consolidated tax rate is being discussed. But there's no finality in it yet. I mean, it's very fluid, very much up in the air right now.
Thank you.
But again, specific to, oh, I'm sorry, Councilor. Go ahead.
I have a question regarding the percentage of the counties in the state that support, that either supported or opposed the recreational marijuana. Do you know what that percentage is? How many joined with Clark County, in our view?
In terms of a ban?
Yeah.
Sir?
Effective.
I know Pierce.
Are we the minority?
Pierce is the only, what I would call, populous county that has a ban in place.
So everybody else supports
it. And I know you don't really necessarily have a ban in place, but for lack of a better way to say it.
So every other county except Pierce and Clark supports the recreational marijuana.
Well, no, Councilor, populous county. I believe there are some smaller counties in eastern Washington that also are not allowing. I can try to get you that information. Is that something you'd like?
Well, I'm just curious if it's basically we're in the minority when it comes to counties in the state, regardless of population. If we're
in the
minority.
I think you are. I think you're in the minority in terms of your ban, for a simplified way to say it.
Yeah, I'll do some research on that, because I know that the Liquor Control Board, because I've been called, and I think Gordy's been called and asked that information, they've been doing some surveys. I think they are trying to get a handle on just what jurisdictions, whether it be cities or counties, are doing, and they may have populated a map, so I can probably look at that.
Enslow may just have that.
Okay.
Maybe as easy as emailing
him. That'd be good information to have.
Has WASAC been involved in this at all?
Yes.
Yeah.
And have they taken a position?
The position that WASAC has, it's on their agenda bill. It shows SHB 2136, and it's marijuana market reforms is how they're dealing with it, relating to comprehensive marijuana market reforms to ensure a well-regulated and taxed marijuana market in Washington State.
So that regard, in particular, I'm interested in the money coming back to the counties that are responsible to handle the legal, the courts and the jails and all of those things. That's the part I'm concerned with.
Enforcement, courts, jails.
Yeah.
I believe, Councilor Stewart, 2136 is the bill I was referencing that was heard in finance. And you're asking about WASAC's position, Councilor Madore. Their position is support of, again, lack of a better way to say it, a pay-for-play provision. And I believe that was a WASAC Legislative Steering Committee position.
Yeah, and that sounds good on its face if we didn't have cities in here just simply being an outlet and all of those legal consequences that end up with people in our courts. That would be fair if there were no, if we weren't subjected to marijuana causing these kind of things to happen. So it's unavoidable. So it's not a realistic position to take that says, well, we're not going to be subject to those kinds of expenses. Well, we are. And it doesn't matter whether or not they sell it in the unincorporated area of Clark County. they're selling it all around us and within cities in the Clark County. So it's not a realistic answer, even though it might be unpopular for us to be able to take that position. The fact is that there's going to be illegal costs because the rest of the other members in the area. So anyway, I would sure like to be able to see us help make that point. It's pay for play makes sense when you are in control of the environment. We're not. That is an uncontrollable factor that impacts us. We are a negatively impacted county, and that's an argument that says, hey, you made it happen. That you're collecting that money, bring it back for us to be able to take care of at least our own legal consequences of it.
So, Mike, I'm the WASAC legislative. That's one of my assignments. When I printed the priority list for March 16th, I see this SHB 2136 is in here. I don't recall having seen this. Now, I know the bills come and go on WASAC depending on if they get killed in the House or Senate. You know, so the list changes. Do you know the earliest time that they had a discussion about it, that this is going to be a priority?
Council, what they had was a, I guess I would call it a general policy discussion about what their position on the 502 implementation broadly would be. And so, and in that were principles that they adopted related to 502 implementation. And in doing so, that's where they probably, as a legislative steering committee, and I would imagine it was even done last fall, that it was done as a, or late last fall into, you know, around Christmas time at one of the final legislatures. I could get the history for you, but they had a set of core principles, and they're applying those principles as it pertains to 502. They're applying those principles to the bills that impact 502, and 2136 being the chosen vehicle. And 2136 was introduced on February 17th, but it was introduced as what's referred to as a title-only bill. Meaning it all it said was an act relating to marijuana.
Okay.
You know, it was more legalese than that. But essentially that's what it said. And the first time we saw this bill publicly was on the 6th of March when it was unveiled to the committee.
Okay. That explains me being surprised when I pulled this today and saw it on here as a priority.
Well, and that's because, Council, I'll bet you there's at least 30 bills floating around that have marijuana 502 impact, and this bill has emerged as what we refer to as the chosen vehicle. So that's why you're only now seeing that number. But that is why WASAC, as a matter of course, adopted a core principle criteria when it came to the marijuana impact on counties, rather than going piecemeal bill by bill.
Okay. Thank you for the update on
that. Yeah, for sure. And so, but Councilor, the moral of the story in my, you know, that I want to relate to you, that it is a tough fight on the because of that pay for play. Councilor Nability make an excellent point, and I am trying to make that point to our legislators, to our delegation, and others. But I want to just report to you that it's not necessarily a favorable response right now.
Yeah.
Thank you. Moving on.
Okay. Next up, the transportation budget. Just give you a heads up that there, I really don't have anything new to offer on that, other than we do know now that the House is going to take up their version, or well, they're going to take up the reform bills, that a number of which I emailed to you, boy, that was 2-3 weeks ago now. They're not going to take up every single one of them because they don't necessarily agree with them all. Namely, the one that deals with the sales tax, I guess the credit or the, and what is now ultimately an outright exemption from sales tax on the construction projects that are contemplated within the revenue package itself. There's disagreement on that in the House. They don't want to do what this put the Senate did. And then on one of the, what they refer to as the ELSA account, which would transfer some of the toxics collect, toxic money that's collected and transfer that to the transportation stormwater compliant. Those are two I know that they're not going to take up, at least that's the current word now. But not a lot to offer on that other than just to tell you that we'll see more breaking loose on transportation or more action, not necessarily breaking loose, but more action on it next week.
Okay.
Any questions on that? And then an update on the standalone legislation. And again, these are not necessarily new to you. You probably haven't committed the numbers to memory, obviously, and necessarily all the topics. We haven't discussed them every week. But these are some of the bills that are still in play. You know, the massage therapy bill, that was the one that put the penalties in place. In reaction to some of the things that have happened down in the city of Vancouver with those facilities. I know that's not an issue that's new to you.
Yeah, so that it changes it. It looks like it makes a misdemeanor if you knowingly allow someone without a license to practice massage or reflexology at your place of business. And so is that moving forward, Mike?
Yeah, I think that it will. This board, or this council, you took a position in favor of that bill for it. It was 5 weeks ago now. It's not even further back.
It allows them not to have a license?
No, quite the opposite, council.
Oh, okay.
I think so. We went through, and Vancouver went through. This actually, I think, fits pretty well with the ordinance change we made, making it more clear and putting in place more requirements for showing who is working at your facility.
Yes.
And posting the license and the photo both here at the county and at the workplace. But what this bill does is it puts a more lofty penalty in place for folks who would be caught knowingly allowing someone without a license to practice in their business.
I think actually the net effect was it got after the owner /operators of some of these facilities,
It would be a misdemeanor, or it could be up to a gross misdemeanor, which is a pretty hefty penalty. It goes from 90 days in jail or a $1,000 fine up to 364 days in jail or $5,000 if I guess you're a repeat offender or something. So I think it's good.
Yeah.
It fits with our ordinance change.
The next one is the Stormwater Fee Flexibility Bill. That got a hearing in the House Environment Committee last week. I would anticipate that bill to move from the committee here soon. The chair told me that he would move it. It may go to transportation because it has DOT impacts. In the Senate, it didn't. It just stayed in the Senate. It started in transportation. It never went to the Environment Committee. And so the House and Senate have different rules or different kind of criteria where they send bills and which committees they go to. And generally speaking, stormwater bills all end up in House Environment. That's why it went there. My hope would be that it does not go to transportation because that's just one more hurdle to jump over. But I know that the prime sponsor of the bill has talked to the chair of the House Transportation Committee, and I have had a conversation with her as well about this bill. So if it got to that point, I hope she would look favorably on it, and we'll go from there. But just wanted to tell you that this bill is moving. It's where it should be in the process right now, and it still needs to keep going, but it's in good shape at this moment.
That's good. That bill would really help us out, and it looks like it's got some strong sponsorship there. I mean, King is he's the Senate Transportation Chair, correct? I mean, so that's good.
Yeah, it came out of the Senate 48-0.
Oh wow! Okay.
It's a pretty big vote. Even the DOT has actually—they say they have concerns about the bill, and then basically proceed to testify against it. So. That's in good shape. One bit of bad news is Senate Bill 5614, that's the Conservation Futures Levy Flexibility Bill, I guess I would call it, on the M&O dollars. That bill, I'm pretty frustrated because that bill came up and showed up on run sheet, and those are the list of bills they're going to consider on the floor three different times last week, and the Senate never got to it. For any number of reasons unrelated to this bill, just other bills took longer, they ran out of time on a given day, but needless to say, it did not get acted upon before the cutoff. So it is more than likely dead for the rest of the session. That bill itself is. I am, however, looking for areas that I could hang the bill, that hang the policy that's contemplated in the bill onto another bill. I've done a couple title searches, and quite frankly, right now, I'm not encouraged by what I have seen for a place to put it. I don't really have many areas, unfortunately. And but I do want to talk to Senator Benton about that. He and I just have not connected since last week. And so I need to close the loop with him, but wanted to give you an update on the situation with that bill.
It won't fit on the DOT bill?
No, sir. It would not.
And it won't fit on the Conservation Futures, the 5614 bill?
No,
that is it.
That's the one we're talking about.
I mean, to link that with the 5314.
No, they're not close enough title, or they're not related enough. They don't reference the right RCWs, Counselor.
Sorry to see that loss.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess the good news on it, Mike, is we've inched it farther. You know, we're getting closer each session. So if it does go away, maybe we can finally get it through next year. Cause it's a good bill and it's good policy, and it's, to me, it's well tailored. It's not just season.
It just got caught up in a time crunch, and that happened. But again, I'm not done looking for places to get it or another way to leverage it out.
Thank you.
So we'll keep after it. The next two are Senator Cleveland's bills. One is on the Elder Justice Center. The other is on the child abuse victims and who pays for the report. Then the report one is the second of those two. The Elder Justice Center bill is a budget impact, so it really hasn't moved. It got a hearing, and then it was parked in the Senate Ways and Means Committee. And what would happen with that bill is, for it to continue to move forward, it would have to be assumed in the Senate budget because it does have a fiscal impact. So what will happen is when the Senate budget comes out, it will contain inside of the budget itself a list of bills that it assumes that are necessary to implement its budget. And this bill needs to be one of those to continue to move forward. So even though this bill hasn't moved anywhere, really beyond the Ways and Means Committee, that's okay. But because it's a Senate bill, it has to be assumed in the Senate budget. And we'll look to find that out probably a week or so after we see the House budget. So it will not be assumed in the House budget because House budget only assumes House bills, Senate budget assumes Senate bills. And then when they merge the documents at the end, they link up the two lists of bills necessary to implement the budget. So that was a very long way of saying this bill has moved to where it needs to be assumed in the Senate budget for it to move further forward.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Looks
good. And then the last one, that the child abuse victims, that one did move out of the Senate unanimously, I believe. It has a hearing scheduled on Friday morning in its House committee, in the House Early Learning and Human Services Committee. So I will sign us in support of that bill as we did on the Senate side.
Great. Are we done?
That's kind of the lay of the land, Counselor. And obviously any questions or comments or other issues you'd like to raise with me, I'd be happy to answer or get back to you with an answer if I can't do it right now.
Well, what's the blue color for?
Spreadsheet.
The blue was one, and actually I included that bill. The blue one was undecided, and actually I included that bill in your materials. I don't know how much of a discussion we want to have on it, but that's the. I think Senator Benton's sponsoring that bill, and basically what it does is I think it does take some local flexibility as it relates to fireworks stands away from local jurisdictions. However, it does so, I believe, in reading through it, in an attempt to standardize some things for folks who deal fireworks across the state so that each jurisdiction isn't completely different all the way around. And it doesn't take away local flexibility on some key things, which include the days of use, the days of sale, and the type of fireworks that can be sold. So it's a tough one. I haven't analyzed it enough or talked with the council enough or the delegation enough to know how detrimental or how
bad or, if at all, negative the impacts are to us. So
according to John Dunaway, our fire marshal, the Association of Local Fire Marshals is opposing that legislation.
They are. Yeah. Well, we might want to take a harder look at it then in the next week and have some conversations, Mike, and maybe try to come up with a position on it.
Thank you.
Brian, I only brought that forward because I know you had adopted, you being the council, had adopted that position last year. I think you did it last fall, right? And I just want to make sure this did not hurt your ability to enforce your new ordinance.
It doesn't look like it does on the major things. Like I said, the days of sale and the days of use, but we need to maybe look at it in the other areas just to make sure we're positive.
All right, so thanks. To you. We got copies of both the House and the Senate version of it here, so thank you very much for that.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Have a good one, Mike.
Bye. Thank you all.
Okay, moving on.
Hey.
So the 1.3, Board of Equalization letter.
Yeah, I believe I talked about this in one-on-ones and believed that all three of you supported.
No. Nope.
Pardon?
No, absolutely not.
And why not?
Because I think it's trying, well, first of all, it's trying to solve the wrong problem. At this point, I think we need to have one-on-one, Mark, again, to talk about this, because I see the, my reservations were that if somebody is has a potential conflict of interest, these appraisers are making money by selling their services to the county, and then they are also serving on the as appeal to the citizens to appeal the valuation of those properties. I'm thinking that somehow we need to address that potential conflict.
Do you know that for a fact?
What I'm not saying is that it is happening, but there's nothing in there to prevent it from happening. That's the problem. If they're getting their livelihood from appraising properties in the county, and then their citizens are applying to them to change those valuations, I have a problem with that.
Well, they still have to follow the state rule during the appraisal, and that's what they're saying, is that unless we're able to use the expert in the field, that we don't have experts down there on the equalization board.
Well, the problem is that they're appealing to the authority in the first they're appealing to the authority. This Board of Equalization is supposed to be a citizen like representatives. Their allegiance is to the citizens rather than to the county. So I'm looking for to address to make sure they're not on the county's team getting money from the county to provide those services, and then the citizen having to go to that team player or the county jurisdiction player. I'm thinking,
okay,
no.
So
that's the problem.
Does that mean then that any certified appraiser that applies to be on this board, you as a board of counselors are going to say no, you can't serve?
No. The problem is that the letter is addressing the wrong problem.
The letter simply asks whether or not it's a conflict of interest that would jeopardize my licensee status as a certified appraiser if I serve on the Board of Equalization. That's the only question being asked.
Which is the wrong question.
And what is the right question?
The right question is, do you have a conflict of interest? Are you contracting with the county? And that's not addressed. If the county is paying them money to appraise, and the citizens are going to that appraiser and say, you know what, I don't agree with this appraisal. They're going to the authority. The solution would be, you're welcome to have your license, enjoy your license, but don't be contracting for the one that you're appealing in opposition to the citizen.
I'm missing something here. We hire certified appraisers when we're selling surplus county property.
Yeah, and I'm good with the certified appraisers. But there's no problem with that.
But your concern is that the county is hiring this person to do appraisals on county property?
I want to know if their paycheck, if their money is coming from the county, if they have a license, that's perfectly fine. But if they're getting money, if that citizen's taxpayers are going to the county and that county is giving money to that appraiser, and the citizen's applying to that appraiser and says, I want you to change something, that's not an unbiased situation.
Okay.
But if the person has a license and he's not getting contracted with the county, I'm good with it.
Okay. I could answer that question in 5 minutes.
It would be up individually. Individually, they would have to recuse themselves from that one person who's appealing their taxes.
When we talked about Mark and I had a lengthy conversation about this as well. I hadn't thought about it from that aspect. These are people that are active in our community, making a living, doing appraisals. Now, a question that you opened up my mind that I don't know is there any influence in our assessor's office? Do they ever contract out for appraisals? Mm-hmm. I don't know if they do. I don't know if that's something they do or if it's all their own in-house appraisers that go out and do the appraisers. But my point was, if I go in to appeal my property tax, my new valuation, and I have to fight it based on what I think have been used other excessive, unrealistic values of other houses around in my neighborhood that are unrealistic, that were done by an appraiser. There's something that makes me uncomfortable about having appraisers on here, on this board, or even real estate people. And so we talked about it, and I see that this is a letter. We also talked about who is the letter to and who is it for. And it's simply ask the question, does this violate the anything that's included in the state license for an appraiser? But really, is that the right question?
Right, it's not the right question.
Well, but because what I talked to Mr. McCauley about is, so if we have any specific individual that we're thinking about in this case, they need to write to their own board and give us a copy of what the response is. But that's about their proprietary interests in making a living. It's not like being an unbiased, really, it's kind of a mediator.
Yeah.
And so is the fact that they do business in the market that mm-hmm. they're mediating
yeah.
kind of...
If our assessor is in any way providing any contracting, if that appraiser is providing any contract services to the county, and the assessor being the authority, mm-hmm. then you can't expect that a citizen is going to go to that person who's getting money from our assessor, directly or indirectly, and rule against the assessor. That's the problem I have with that. Anna, you had something?
Darren called me a couple of weeks ago and asked me if I would sit down on your behalf to review the letter to give to you, and I did. And a couple of questions I asked him, which has been raised in this discussion, is where are the assurances that there wouldn't be conflict of interest? Because currently there is one on the board now. There is one person that's serving on the advisory board that has stopped providing all services, volunteer services to that board because her license, the licensing problem is in question. And so Daniel Weaver originally brought that to your attention when you were going to brought that to your attention, and so he may have a different opinion than Darren does, but the question, his answer to that question was they would voluntarily, I said, has that ever come up where you had a conflict of interest in an appeal process? And he said, yes, and they voluntarily recuse themselves.
Sure.
And I said, well, I'm not sure that would be, the counselors would have to look at that to see if that's...
To me, that's not far enough, because if at that particular property, that particular person could receive funds in order to appraise that specific, but if there already there's a bond of our assessor somehow funneling money, legal money for services, valid services, to that appraiser, then they're a team. They got a contractual relationship, and there's a favor biased against the citizen and for the assessor. That's the problem I have. So it's not that they're licensed. That's perfectly fine, they're licensed. That's good. That's extra expertise and professionalism. The problem is that this opens the door, or leaves the door open, and doesn't address the situation of some kind of a money bond between our assessor and that appraiser.
So we need to answer both questions.
In that, that is in the real estate market.
I'm going to answer either one.
You're going to say something?
Yeah. The question is that Weaver is the one that brought up the question, that he understood that the state law said that there could be a conflict, and if they do that they could lose their license. And so I understand that he wanted to get an AG's opinion or a legal opinion as to whether or not they would, because they were afraid that they would limit the number of expert personnel that could serve on that.
Yeah.
Now, when they recuse themselves, that pretty much removes them from making a decision on that property. And that's what they've been doing. They're like, we do that here. So when I recuse myself here on an issue, you don't vote in favor of what I might have done. I recuse, and you guys make your own decision to do that.
And certainly that would be obvious. It would be, on its face, illegal for them to be able to vote on that. The problem is that I'm not concerned about that particular property. I'm concerned with the relationship of, you know, I'll pat your back, you pat mine, and we'll work together and I'll rule in your favor, which is just how, you know, they're a team, and the citizen applying to them, not regarding, I didn't apply to that property, I applied to all the other ones, so I'm getting money from the assessor to do those other ones, but I'll rule, guess what, I'm going to rule in favor of the assessor.
We're a team.
That's the problem.
We're a team, that was the point I'm making. We're a team here. If I recuse myself, you don't vote in my favor.
Here's the difference. The difference is when you sit on the county councilors, the array of what we can look at and be asked to make decisions about is profoundly long and complicated. So it is possible that in our personal or business life, we could see, I'm going to err on the side of recusing myself on this. This has to do with only one thing, property valuations and people who work in that industry. And my opinion is, if you work in that industry, you do not sit on an appeal board for the very work that people in your network do.
Mm-hmm.
But I also see that with real estate, with real estate sales or something like that. And I'll tell you why I'm more sensitive to this. Our senior people, and particularly women that are left without a spouse, the predatory conduct that goes on in every way, and there are people that are after women or men that are widowers to do these reverse mortgages. For example, And this is not too far afield. This is the whole thing about us, if somebody goes in for an appeal, making sure their interests are as protected as they can be. So a husband and wife are elderly. They do a reverse mortgage. The husband dies. The woman gets out of the house, gets evicted. The house gets sold. So you better have the revenue to go somewhere else. So I don't know how they work that out. But on the death of one of the parties, that mortgage is called.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't understand that. So the predatory behavior that's out there, and I'm not saying we have predatory appraisals,
oh.
appraisers, But I'm not saying we don't have either. Right. And with real estate, it's the same. They're looking for opportunities, and I just think the vulnerability it is when somebody goes in to appeal their property tax for financial reasons. That should be a place they really get
neutrality.
A balanced right. neutrality and fairness.
And what this is has nothing to do with reverse mortgage.
No, I know. I'm talking about the...
Well, you're assuming it actually has the individual themselves when we increase their property taxes.
I've been there, Tom. I know what they do.
That's when that's reason they appeal, not because all of a sudden they can't afford it. They go in there and say,
well,
I'm appealing because of this, or I'm appealing because I qualify for low-income senior citizen.
But there is a financial implication with it, too. And it takes an enormous amount of time to go through that process.
Well, actually, Mark's been trying to talk for some time. You got something, Mark?
We can answer the question whether I just looked up on the county checkbook whether or not we made any payments to this. I got the name of the lady, Mandy Schoolfield. I went back to July 2010, and the only payments she's received from the county are from the Board of Equalization. I've also got emails to Peter and Linda Lotto to see if they ever contract out appraisal work. But this question still needs to be asked. And if you don't want to ask the question, I will recommend that Mandy go to the licensing department herself and ask the very same question.
It's a wrong question, Mark.
She wants an answer to this question, sir.
Well, the answer to this question is I do not support this.
Okay.
And this does not apply to one Mandy individual. This opens.
Right.
This says we want to leave the door wide open for appraisers without any restriction who may already have some kind of a profitable relationship with our assessor on that board. And I'm thinking the question is not, is that going to impact your license? We don't care about that. Well, we care about it, but that's really not the right question. What is the right question is, how do we ensure that we have a neutral party who is professional and informed and qualified for a citizen to appeal to who has no bond, a special kind of arrangement with, or has some kind of a profitable arrangement with our own county? That's the question. I want to make sure that citizen goes to an uninterested third party who has no dog in the fight and no inclination whatsoever to cozy up to our assessor.
It doesn't go to our assessor. They're going to the appeals board because the assessor's office has jacked up their rate and will not change it.
And this board has the authority to change it. Mm-hmm. That's why they're there.
It has to follow state guidelines. They can't just go back and do it.
They have discretion. That's what this board has.
I think you need to go back and see what they have. They have to follow the state regulations.
Yes,
and make
they do.
Their appraisal.
I think if we have anybody, look, here's the policy, the overriding policy. Any volunteers who sit on any board or commission and are concerned that their work there may create difficulties for them in a state license they have for their primary employment, it's up to them to contact their own licensing agency and to get the answer to that themselves.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So at this point, I am assuming we have consensus not to move this forward.
I'm good with it.
Okay.
You're not.
I'm not.
I can understand the woman needs an answer, but I don't think we're the people to ask the question. So I think she needs to do it herself. So no,
so
I wouldn't move forward on it.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So thank you. Moving on. Let me see what I do with my agenda. There it is. Okay.
That's my agenda.
Yes, thank you. Okay, new business. Tom?
I had something. We were told at one time that we would be schooled or shown from Doug Lasher how to go online and bid for properties. Mm-hmm. We haven't.
Well, actually, you can do one-on-one, go down, make an appointment with him, sit down.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. We got this thing here. I thought he was going to come up and offer a time that we would all go there and do that. Have you done that?
That's a kind of... Well, yeah, I'm very interested to do it. It's my bandwidth that won't let me do it right yet. But what I would suggest is that a sit-down one-on-one meeting in his office would be the way to gain insight on that.
That's not the way I read it. I read that he'd come to the board and maybe Mark would say, set us up or whatever. I could go over him personally. I could do that.
Tom, I don't remember what that's about.
We have some questions as to the procedures as to when we go online to buy properties. And
Who is we?
The general public. So the general public goes online to buy properties from the county, and we were selling property that was not buildable or was illegal lots. And we knew they were illegal lots, but we didn't tell the people. So we sold one lot over and over and over, and people were investing twenties and thirties thousands of dollars in this property. So we said, well, we want to know what you have and why you can't provide the information that we know.
So
we were trying to have a better understanding why we couldn't do that and how it was done.
So, okay. so you got to make an appointment with Mr. Treasurer. Okay.
Did you guys get a? I guess it was from Linnea about it was Captain Stover who died, and he was looking to have a memorial flag placed over at Harmony Sports Field.
No,
you didn't get
it.
Okay. Don't think
I'll work on this week to bring you up to date on what I have, so you're aware of it, and we'll talk about it. That's all I had.
Okay.
I'm going to pass. Thank you.
Okay. Mark?
Nothing.
Okay. Axel?
I'm working on lots of stuff, but I'm
welcome
good today.
To the club.
Yeah.
Peter?
I don't have anything, but when you're talking about the marijuana and the counties, MRSC has an interactive map that you can go to if you just Google on their webpage on recreational marijuana, uh-huh. and it'll show you all the county positions.
Oh, I already emailed them a map.
There you go. Mr. iPad Wizard. Holly.
Excellent.
Anna?
Anticipation. Thank you.
Okay, so we're done. Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
On favor. We're adjourned. Thanks.